Dialed it up and had it circled back in the summer. Auburn taking care of business against Alabama in the Iron Bowl this year.
And that was a heck of a game, I thought. One of the best games I've seen all year in college football. And just a big, big win for Auburn, the biggest win they've had in 2 years. And one that was really needed, I think, for a lot of Auburn alumni and fans.
All right, I look at the game from, although I grew up a Bama fan, and a household of Auburn fans, but I can look at the football game, remove all of that, and look at the game from an honest perspective. So I want to get your thoughts before I'll tell you my thoughts about the end of the first half and then the last play of the game for Auburn before they ran the clock out. Does Nick Saban have a gripe about either?
I wasn't firmly aware of the end of the half rule, but they brought on a umpire, I guess, on TV or what have you, or afterwards, and he said that the guys followed it right. So that's, you know, they followed the rules right, and Auburn got their second, got the kickoff, and got those 3 points. I thought that was really big for momentum going to halftime. And then the end of the game, there's no question in my mind that Gus just outfoxed Nick Saban. And I think Nick has acted a lot like a crybaby since then, complaining about it and saying things like it's unfair. I just think that's really a loser talk to me.
I agree with you as far as the last play. I'm totally on board with you. As far as the end of the first half, I think that if Bama just said, hey, given the second, just start the clock again, there's no way Auburn would have got a field goal attempt off. And so I understand they did it. Yeah, and this is where that rule needs to be changed, because this is where I'm totally in favor of whether it's Nick Saban or anybody in that situation, and I don't know exactly how you put that into play. I don't know if you automatically take 3 seconds off the clock or whatever the case may be, because there's no way that Auburn would have been able to get their field goal team out there to attempt a field goal in that situation.
That's right. So that was a good break by Auburn, but, everything was followed correctly. And, that game had a lot of twists and turns, a lot of back and forth. You know, it looked like Auburn had all the momentum when they got that pick six and went up 17-10. And then, you know, you snap your fingers and it's suddenly 24-17 Alabama with the kick return and the turnover and the quick touchdown. So, I thought both teams played pretty well, especially offensively. And Auburn just, made the plays there in the end. And then Alabama, of course, missed that field goal, the doink right off the crossbar there that could have tied it.
Is this enough now? Will Auburn fans embrace Gus Malzahn? I mean, I know he's getting paid, and he doesn't really have to have the full love and support of the Auburn nation. But can they just get off his back, let him enjoy the offseason just one time? That's all I'm asking, because, first of all, I don't think Auburn fans understand just how fortunate they are to have Gus Malzahn as their head coach.
Well, I think as far as the offseason goes, absolutely. I think he's bought himself a whole lot of goodwill for the offseason. So, yeah, I think they'll be off his back. But, this is a results business, and fine margins can make such a difference between winning and losing, as we saw in the Iron Bowl. So, next season, if things don't go well, I'm sure it'll be the same complaints and the same noise we've heard before. Just, it's not going to end unless, he wins a couple of championships or something, and then puts Auburn back among the elite of college football, which, I'm not sure they can get there or not. But that's probably what it would take to sort of keep him from being a year-to-year guy as far as popularity and being safe.
I will say this. The only thing I will disagree on Gus Malzahn, his comments after the game talking about the fact that his squad played the toughest schedule in all of college football this year, and no mistake about it, it's not even close. Ask Texas A&M that, and then because to me, given the choice, because it's equal as far as what Auburn did, except they played Clemson on the road, Auburn played Oregon. I'll take Texas A&M's schedule for the worst over what Auburn brought to the table.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. I think most coaches are just the word escapes me, but just sort of myopically focused on their own programs when they talk about things like that, but. Auburn's schedule has been really, really tough. One of the toughest schedules that I've seen since covering this team over the past 20-ish years. And to come out 9-3 and have a chance to win 10 games, I think is a really good job by those coaching staff.
Well, especially when you look at the teams they lost to, number 2 LSU, these are the current rankings, number 2 LSU, number 4 Georgia, and number 9 Florida. And to if that's your three losses, and basically we're talking about situations, too, where all three of those games, you had opportunities to win all three as well.
In all three games in the fourth quarter, absolutely. You know, they had two drives against Georgia with a chance to tie it there, or if they wanted to go for two, maybe win it. And, you know, the Florida game was in doubt there until, you know, that long run by the running back there that sort of cinched it. And then, you know, LSU was, I think it was just a three-point game, right, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, very, very close games, very tight games, where just a few plays here and there made the difference. And that was the same in the Iron Bowl, too, of course.
Explain to me this one, though, and this is the part where I'm having a tough time understanding, and I don't know if it's just a backlash, here's a chance to pile on Alabama and Nick Saban, but Auburn going into the ball game, as far as on Saturday, one of six teams that did not allow over 24 points the entire year. Alabama, with that made field goal there with 2 minutes to go, they would have doubled that amount. And yet, we saw what LSU, you know, their struggles against Auburn's defense. Georgia, same thing. Florida, also the same thing. That's why I don't understand why at least Alabama didn't receive more credit with the points that they were able to score against that Auburn defense.
Especially with the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
And they deserve a ton of credit, you know. And, you know, Mac Jones had a terrific game. You know, he did have those two interceptions, the pick sixes, but he did throw for four touchdowns. Jalen Waddle, three touchdowns, receiving one touchdown. You know, on the kick return, he was virtually unstoppable. You know, and he comes back next year, he's going to be a very high draft pick in 2021. That is for certain. And then I thought Najee Harris for Alabama, the running back, was really, really good. You know, they're a tough team to beat because they're so good in both areas offensively. I mean, a tough team to stop because they can, you know, they've got four of the best receivers in the country. And then on top of that, they've got a really good offensive line and one of the best running backs in the country. So I thought they played offensively one of the better games other than the two turnovers by Mac Jones.
Hey, by the way, I'm curious. On Saturday with my Countdown to Kickoff tailgate show, I had Tommy Tuberville on. You know, throughout the year, I've been celebrating the 150 years of college football, and especially with Rivalry Week, I wanted somebody who has coached in these games. And here's Tommy Tuberville. He is the owner of the longest winning streak for Auburn against Alabama of all the coaches ever gone up against the Crimson Tide with the 6 straight wins. How does Auburn fans view Tommy Tuberville now that time has passed?
I think they'll look back on his, you know, 10 or so years at Auburn as being pretty positive. You know, he had that winning streak over Alabama, had those great wins against Florida, you know, on the road where Florida was number one. That 2004 season probably should have resulted in Auburn having an opportunity to play for the national championship. So, you know, he had some really good years for the Tigers. I just don't think he was ready for the big change that was coming when Nick Saban, you know, sort of entered the SEC and really took recruiting to another level. But I think, you know, coaches like Tommy and, you know, Gene Chizik now, I think people, after those coaches have gone after a little while, even though they had, you know, some rough finishes to their careers, I think now you can look back and see the positives more so than that last season or the last couple of seasons.
All right, I'm going to go back to the Auburn successes against Alabama over the last decade. So 2010, you know, Nick Saban, Alabama, just getting rolling there. So no problems with 2010, hiccup in the schedule. 2013, you know, back-to-back years of national titles before Auburn pulled the kick six and had a chance to win a national title themselves until Florida State scores in the waning seconds of that national title game. Still didn't think that Auburn had a chance to, you know, surpass Alabama at that point. 2017, kind of same situation. Alabama, they lose to Auburn that final regular season game. They were banged up at linebackers. They get healthy. They back into the college football playoff. They end up winning the national championship. I think this is the year, if there's ever a year, for Auburn to take full advantage of a win against Alabama, knowing what Alabama loses on offense going into next season. This is an opportunity for Gus Malzahn and that staff, especially with a returning quarterback with Bo Nix, a chance to actually even the playing field, if not pass Alabama, as far as 2020 and beyond?
Well, it's going to take some work in the recruiting end of it, because Alabama, you know, they're stacking, you know, number one, number two, number three national classes year after year after year, and Auburn's not quite doing that yet. And they're putting, you know, 10 or so guys in the trap just about every single year. So I still think Auburn has work to do in the recruiting end to reach that. But just from a team standpoint, if Auburn can rebuild the offensive line, if they can, you know, sort of reload on the defensive line, which, you know, they're not going to be as good without Marlin and Derrick, but they can still be pretty good. Yeah, they have a chance, but they have not won at Bryant Denny since 2010. I wouldn't dismiss that 2010 game very much, because, you know, the 2009 Alabama team won the national championship. They were going for a second straight, and they were up 24-0 there at Bryant Denny, and that was the game called the comeback now, I guess, where Auburn just erupted for that comeback, and one of the better wins, I think, in Auburn history.
And we look at the fact, too, and I was talking about this yesterday with Ryan Callahan, who covers Tennessee, the fact that here's a Tennessee team currently, when you look at the recruiting class that, you know, with the early signing period, well, now it's the signing period. We get a late one now, but in a little bit later this month is we get the first indications. And Tennessee, top 20, right, except the fact that there's, you know, you look at all the teams ahead of them as far as the SEC and even two or three behind them. I bring it up because here's Auburn currently in the top 10, but you have teams like an Alabama, an LSU, Texas A&M, Georgia, all ahead. So it's great that you've got a top 10 recruiting class, but if there's teams in your same conference ahead of you, especially inside your division, then that means you've got to coach players up better just because to make up that difference.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's so competitive recruiting, and the talent in the SEC, especially the West, is so difficult to overcome. I mean, you look at our recruiting records right now, rivals. LSU's number one in the country, Alabama's fourth, Texas A&M's fifth, Florida's seventh, Auburn's eighth, and Georgia's ninth. And, you know, the only reason Georgia is ninth is because they've got 15 commitments right now compared to most schools have 20 or more. Auburn has 21. So, you know, Georgia's average star rating is probably first or second in the country right now. So, you know, they're going to have a top two or three class, most likely two. So, you know, that's four or five of Auburn's rivals right there are teams that are going to be on their schedule that, you know, are top 10 recruiting classes. And those schools are in the top 10 just about every single year. So, absolutely, it's tough. It's very competitive. And, you know, you miss out on one position or a couple of kids, and it can make a really big difference.
You know, Brian, as we had Scott Ramsey on earlier this week, he's the president and CEO of the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl. And one of the things that we bring up here, we are talking about the 22nd annual Music City Bowl, but it just worked out this way. But it seems like from a historical standpoint, the team that is the winner of the year before, they use that as a stepping stone to, you know, to lead to a better season the next year. And Auburn, a perfect example. Certainly it was a disappointing year last year, but they served notice in that blowout victory against Purdue, especially with what they did in the first half. It basically serves as a nice tool there for coaches when they come to coach whichever the two teams are, which will be announced on Sunday, to participate in this year's Music City Bowl. You know, just from a historic standpoint, the opportunity to use this particular game as a stepping stone for the next season.
Yeah, and we haven't seen that offense that Auburn put up against Purdue, but that was an impressive outing there, and that did help them build a little momentum, I thought, going in to the offseason and going into this season. And, you know, for me, my trip to Nashville and the Music City Bowl, I thought it was really good, well-organized bowl. I think they do a really good job with, you know, putting on a terrific bowl for everybody involved.